Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the February 2011 edition of Family Circle magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called Pregnancy Test by Frederick Broaden. The sexual pressure on today's kids from peers, pop culture, and their own raging hormones can be intense. And while there's no way to monitor teens and tweens 24/7, you can, hopefully, teach them to do the right thing. You can't miss it. American attitudes on adolescent pregnancy have taken a big U-turn since the time of shotgun weddings, home for unwed mothers, and Scarlet A's. Nowadays, a teen parent might land on a hit reality show like MTV's 16 and Pregnant or its spinoff, Teen Mom, and show up on multiple magazine covers. Or she might be like Bristol Palin, score a role on Dancing with the Stars. And all that openness isn't reserved for the world of entertainment. It's also evident down the block. My 16-year-old has a peer who's pregnant, and the mother's friends are planning a huge shower with gifts, decorations, and parties, says Susan in Kansas City, a woman who doesn't want her real name used because she worries that her opinion might offend people. There have been other modern twists as well. In Gloucester, Massachusetts, 17 high school girls allegedly made a pact to each have a baby the same year the town's teen pregnancy rate quadrupled. But acceptance that verges on glamorizing the baby bump can't change the fact that teen pregnancy is still a major problem for families and the nation. Every hour, 87 teen couples conceive and 50 adolescent girls give birth. That's more than 730,000 pregnancies annually, which means the U.S. has the highest rate of any industrialized country, according to the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unwanted Pregnancy. Although the birth rate among adolescents dropped 2% in 2008, that's the most recent statistic, it's still higher than it was 5 years ago. One-third of girls conceive before age 20, and one in six deliver a baby. Most surprisingly, about 20% of young people's pregnancies are actually intended, says Bill Albert, chief program officer of the National Campaign. Experts are baffled, given that effective birth control options are readily available. They suggest a constellation of possible explanations. For starters, there are many parents who think their kids aren't the ones at risk. About 70% of Americans believe most teen parents come from impoverished single-parent homes. But in truth, two-thirds of pregnant teens live with two parents. 7 in 10 live above the poverty line. Anybody who says teen pregnancy doesn't happen here is mistaken, says Sarah Brown, CEO of the National Campaign. It's everywhere. Troubling, too, is this image of information overload, is that kids aren't getting complete and accurate information about how to manage their emotions and physical drives. Though two-thirds of 12th graders say they have had sex, only about half report talking with their parents about it. Just 43% have been given basic details like how to use contraception and, significantly, how to broach the topic with a potential partner. So they end up not using birth control, using it incorrectly, or relying on a less effective method for preventing pregnancy. Net result, the contraceptive failure is 25% higher for teen girls than adult women. Most parents confess deep uneasiness, even embarrassment, about discussing sex and pregnancy prevention. The subject brings up a lot of control issues, says Rosalind Wiseman, author of Queen Bees and Wannabes, and a Family Circle editor. We're forced to face the fact that our children make decisions without our input and against what we choose for them. And the topic also brings up our own discomfort about the messiness of sexual responsibility. We don't like thinking about teen sexual activity, so we deny it. Teen motherhood, adoption, abortion, radically different ideas about who a person should have sex with, when and why, these topics are hard for families, as they are for society at large. It's not like the subject of drugs, where you can say, don't ever do it. It's more like, wait, not yet, eventually. The message has to be much more nuanced. Another complication, says Wiseman, is that moms and dads are too apt to believe teens who say they're still virgins. Kids are great at spinning things in their own minds, so they come across incredibly sincere, and most adults fall for the stories. Many families depend too much on school for sex education, but those classes meet only a couple of hours for a few weeks. Kids need answers all the time, and even parents who are willing to address these issues at home aren't sure what they should be saying. There's a big concern that about teaching contraception, you're giving approval to your kids to have sex. But research shows that's not true. It's like telling your children not to drink, but if you do drink, don't drive. Ignorance doesn't hold them back. In fact, it puts them at greater risk. What many parents don't realize is that information being given in sex ed isn't always complete. While 22 states require emphasis on abstinence in these classes and 17 suggest that contraception be mentioned, today no state makes it compulsory to educate kids about birth control. Meanwhile, the best approach by far, according to a recent study by the University of Pennsylvania, is instruction that focuses on abstinence until teens are older, but not necessarily married, and answers students' questions about birth control accurately. I live in an abstinence-only state, says Paula of Spartanburg, South Carolina, who has two daughters who became teen mothers, one at 15, the other at 17. And at home, we had very strict guidelines about dating and sex. If you could turn back the clock, I would have brought up birth control more often, including how important it was for them not to leave it up to the young man. Some parents, too, may feel discouraged about competing with the deluge of outside information their tweens and teens are flooded with. And they're right to be concerned. Kids aged 12 to 17 who watch a lot of sexually charged television shows are twice as likely to experience teen pregnancy than those who watch less. The idea of being in the spotlight, whether as a star of a TV show or just your own social group, as well as the unconditional love babies bring, may explain why many teen girls become pregnant. Some teens think a baby automatically makes you an adult, and others think of a baby almost as an accessory or a cool thing to have. Susan, who decided not to let her daughter attend the friend's baby shower, worries that teen motherhood is starting to look too easy. When we celebrate it that much, she says, I think we risk making the pregnant girl's peers jealous of the attention. You can show support without forgetting that it's really not okay. There are no guarantees that our kids will make it through their teen years without experiencing a pregnancy. But one truth remains. The research shows that parents who brave their own discomfort and talk with their children about relationships, love, sex, and contraception, who express honest caring and concern about the issues and are clear about what they think and why, greatly reduce their children's risk of teen parenthood. Mothers and fathers, in other words, still have an enormous influence, even during those times when what's happening in the moment may overwhelm a kid's common sense. Not my kid. Forget about having the talk. Preventing teen pregnancy requires an ongoing series of short conversations with plenty of listening on both sides. Here are 9 tips. Number 1, stay close. Teens who feel connected to their parents delay sexual intercourse longer than those who don't. Once or twice a week, do something just for fun with your teen. When you make yourself available in a relaxed way, he or she will be more likely to come to you about important things. Number 2, be prepared. Decide now with your spouse what message you want to convey, such as, our religion requires abstinence until marriage, and we think that's best. Or, we want you to finish your education before you have children. Or, a loving relationship is based on caring and respect and doesn't have to involve sex. If you've thought your ideas through, you'll be less uncomfortable, and your child will remember what you said. Number 3, give complete facts. To obtain information about contraception, visit the website of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. That is ACOG.org. Spark value talks by discussing what you watch together on TV. The National Campaign has partnered with MTV to create discussion guides to 16 and pregnant. Number 4, stay vigilant. Boyfriends and girlfriends should be allowed only in shared areas of the house, not the bedroom. From time to time, a parent should pop in unexpectedly, maybe with snacks. If there's an upcoming party, call and ask directly how it will be monitored. Will the parents be around? Are they planning to be present but in another room? Or will they be checking in occasionally? If the answers don't satisfy you, no party. Number 5, push healthy passions. When tweens and teens develop talents and abilities through group memberships, clubs, sports, theater, they are more likely to have clear goals, which in turn makes them more likely to think about their choices. Kids who feel they have a promising future are the most deliberate in preventing pregnancy. Hope is a great contraceptive. Number 6, instill healthy guilt. Knowing that you disapprove could be what keeps your teen from making a bad decision. Kids do internalize your values. Their own guilt is a stop sign. Make your feelings clear. For example, if you're watching a show featuring a pregnant teen, say, if this happens to you, I'll be extremely disappointed. Just avoid coming down so hard that your child is afraid to reach out for help if she needs it. Number 7, make babies real. Give your son and daughters opportunity to babysit or enroll them in high school classes in which students care for a computerized life-size doll, a doll that's programmed to cry, feed, and need diaper changes. Studies show these lessons increase teens' awareness of how demanding and relentless parenting responsibilities are and make them want to delay the experience. About half of all high schools in the USA have these dolls. If yours isn't one of them, ask your administration or consider bringing in the program yourself. Go to realityworks.com for more information. Number 8, offer scripts. Teens equipped with the exact words and phrases are better able to say no in the heat of the moment. A girl who is told sex will make us closer can respond, "Not if I'm worried about getting pregnant. The pressure will drive us apart." A boy urged by friends, "Get laid and be a man," can say, "I am a man. I don't need a pregnancy or sexual disease to interfere with my dreams and goals." A boy whose girlfriend says, "Don't you like me?" can reply, "Yes, but I respect you. You're beautiful and I want to know you better." The last tip, number 9, don't stop talking. Pregnancy may be hardest for everyone when it occurs in the younger adolescents, but is more common among older teens. So keep the conversation going, even after they graduate from high school. Support System by Pamela Kramer. Maybe your parents need to spend smarter, or maybe their retirement savings aren't enough to cover the bills. Whatever the problem, there are ways to help without jeopardizing your own family's finances. Lipta, 38, of Tallahassee, Florida, always thought her parents would have enough money to retire in comfort, but things didn't work out that way. After her father passed away 2 years ago, her 73-year-old mother was partially paralyzed and had a tough time paying her mortgage and mounting medical expenses. "Money is the last thing I wanted my mom to worry about," says Lipka, a part-time legal researcher. She tried to help conserve her mother's limited resources by buying her groceries and taking her out for meals. But that put a financial strain on Lipka and her husband, Jerry, a salesman. They were already struggling with the high cost of raising their children, Christopher, 16, and Maya, 16, and Grace, 2. "Mom had some income and investments, but we worried how long her money would last, especially if she kept having setbacks." Lipka, whose mother died in October, is one of the growing number of Americans who have felt the squeeze trying to help their aging parents make ends meet. Across the country, seniors have seen rising costs take huge chunks out of their Social Security and pension checks. In the face of longer lifespans and chronic illness, even those who've diligently saved all their lives are seeing their nest eggs dwindle. As a result, about one in three adults contribute to their parents' care, on an average $2,500 a year. That can be hard not only on your pocketbook, but also your emotions. Becoming a parent to your parents is not what any of us expected to be doing. It's new and it's often frightening. Whether your mom and dad need to manage their money more wisely or cope with a full-blown financial crisis, there are ways to lend them a hand without sacrificing your savings or your sanity. Your parents are confident they have enough money to live comfortably during their retirement years. You'd like to get a clear picture of their financial situation before a crisis occurs, but they feel money matters are private and don't want to talk about them. An indirect approach is usually the best way to get them to drop their guard and start a conversation. You could say, "Mom, my best friend's parents are really struggling with money, and she's helping them to sort it out. How are you guys doing?" You could pass along relevant newspaper and magazine articles. It may take several attempts, but chances are good that money's on their mind, and they'll be relieved to talk about it. Once they do open up, gather their financial paperwork, bank statements, investments, loan documents, and determine their total assets and liability, income, and expenses. Reassure them that you want to be certain they have enough money for years to come, and that you are not trying to control them. Some seniors are hesitant to share financial information because they're worried their children will take their money. Then figure out how long their funds will last at the current rate of spending. If there's not enough money, your parents need to adjust their investments. Now is a good time to ask your parents about other key money matters. Do they want to stay in their home or sell it and move to a smaller place? Do they have a long-term care policy? When seniors run out of money and don't have coverage, the cost of care usually falls to their kids. If your parents don't have insurance, suggest buying them a policy and splitting the cost with all your siblings. And if your parents won't discuss their finances, hire a financial advisor. Ask friends and family members for references. Use a fee-based professional rather than one who earns commissions on sales. You want someone who is independent and will recommend what is in your client's best interest. Set up an initial meeting and inform your parents you're coming along, but that they'll have the say on hiring an advisor and how to manage the money. Here's another scenario. Half of your parents' retirement fund was invested in the stock market at your urging, and the value of their portfolio has plummeted. Though they tried to downplay their troubles, you can see the warning signs, including mounting unpaid bills, maxed out credit cards, house repairs left undone. The stress is taking a toll on you and causing arguments between you, your husband, and your siblings. So don't waste time and energy feeling guilty. Instead, address the problem head on. Figure out how much they're coming up short each month, then look for immediate ways to cut expenses. Simple cutbacks like eating out less and canceling premium cable channels can save a couple of $100 a month. At the same time, take steps to boost their income. One option is moving low-rate savings and money market funds into higher yield rating short-term money market accounts or CDs. Encourage them to sell unnecessary possessions like their stamp collection or the dining room furniture that they never use. You've also got to tackle their credit card debt. First, discourage your parents from racking up more charges. Then go to the National Foundation for Credit Counseling at nfcc.org to find an expert who can help negotiate with their creditors and set up a payment plan. If you want to give them money to help pay off what they owe, talk with your spouse about how much you can afford. Then sit down with your siblings and ask them to contribute in a way that feels fair to everyone. Those who earn less could help out in another way, such as by taking your parents to doctor's appointments. You want to work together for their sake and keep past rivalries out of it. A plan that involves the entire family will ease your anxiety and keep your spouse from feeling angry and resentful. If you can't come to an agreement, consider hiring a financial advisor or an attorney to act as an intermediary. If these steps don't bring budget back in line, your parents may have to take out a reverse mortgage, which allows those 62 and over to borrow against the equity in their home. The loan doesn't have to be paid off until they move, sell the property, or pass away. Reverse mortgages typically have steep fees and aren't right for everyone. A financial advisor can help you weigh the pros and cons. The last scenario, your mom and dad have always counted on selling their house and buying a cheaper place to finance their retirement, but the value has dropped and they can't find a buyer. Your parents have missed several mortgage payments and could be facing foreclosure. Get the name of the lender and call immediately to find out what their options are for getting back on track. Most mortgage firms will work with delinquent borrowers by negotiating new payment plans or refinancing their loans at lower rates. The sooner you get in touch, the greater chance you have of saving their home. Be prepared to explain why your parents haven't been able to make their payments and to provide information about their overall assets and liabilities. If you don't want to negotiate with the lender yourself, have a housing counselor do it for you. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD.gov, offers free or low-cost help nationwide. And its new Hope for Homeowners program provides 30-year fixed-rate FHA mortgages for those at risk of foreclosure. In the meantime, help your parents sort out their bills and determine which ones need to be paid immediately. Call their uninsured creditors, such as doctors and dentists, and ask to postpone or reduce their payments. If foreclosure is inevitable and your parents owe more in their loan than the house is worth, consider a short sale, where the bank agrees to accept less than the loan balance. Another possibility is filing for bankruptcy, which would allow your parents to keep their home and eliminate some of their debt. Contact the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys at www.naela.org to find a lawyer who can help you all decide what's the best course of action. Voices for Children. Gina Price, 45, hometown, San Diego. Family, husband, Joseph, daughter, Audrey. By Allison Goldman. Gina Price and Jacob, names have been changed, love spending the time together. But she isn't Jacob's mother or teacher. She's his court-appointed special advocate, CASA, and the reason that Jacob, a former foster child, now has a permanent home. CASA, that's C-A-S-A, volunteers are assigned by judges to look after abused and neglected kids in the foster care system. These mentors are often the only constant in a childhood filled with changing homes. Since CASA's 1977 inception, its advocates have served more than 2 million kids. Jenna, a former attorney and current stay-at-home mom, was at work 12 years ago when she heard about the CASA in San Diego, and she signed up immediately. There's potential in all of these children, says Jenna, who has since overseen several foster kids. They just need someone to pay attention to what's going on in their lives. In 2005, Jenna met Jacob, then age 9. Since entering foster care 3 years earlier, he had moved 6 times. Jacob was scared and angry, and he had trouble trusting people. Because of his multiple placements and emotional instability, he had been deemed unadoptable, meaning he would be in foster care until the age of 18. But Jenna had hope for Jacob. Rather than concentrating on his past troubles, she focused on what the two of them could do in the present to shape a positive future. Jenna built his trust by spending time with him. They go on hikes and visit the zoo together. She worked tirelessly to find Jacob the right classes and teachers to help him succeed at school. And she went to court to fight for his right to a foster home that could meet his needs. When Jacob was 11, the court saw his progress and reversed the unadoptable decision. Soon afterwards, he met the couple who would become his adoptive parents. Jenna's experience with CASA has taught her that by being there for a child, you can create enormous and exciting changes in his life. Kids like Jacob have been through so much, she says, but there is still a wonderful person deep down inside. If you'd like to know more about this organization, visit CASAFORCHILDREN.org. That's CASAforChildren.org. Here's a health question. I've had a cold for what seems like weeks. Should I see a doctor? Answer. Yes, the typical cold lasts 7 to 9 days, with people usually feeling the worst on days 2 to 4, says Priya Waggle, MD. If you experience symptoms for a longer period of time, check with your doctor to be sure you don't have something more serious, like a sinus infection. A cold is a virus, so antibiotics won't help. But sinusitis can be bacterial and should or may be treated with a prescription. Shake it off. Surprising but true, you are more apt to catch a cold from shaking someone's hand than from kissing on the cheek. So here's some cold remedies. They won't cure the cold, but they'll ease the symptoms. Number one, drink plenty of water and other non-caffeinated beverages. It will loosen congestion and prevent dehydration. Number two, gargle with warm salt water, 1 cup water and 1/2 teaspoon salt. It draws up the excess fluid and easily soothes a sore throat. Number three, spray or drop saline into the nose. It combats stuffiness without the rebound effect. Number four, eat some chicken soup. It may loosen mucus and even act as an anti-inflammatory. The final tip, try an over-the-counter remedy. In the short term, decongestants and pain relievers may help. If you use a humidifier, follow these tips. Run it on low during the cold and flu season. Run it in the bedroom. That's where you are. Chances are you spend more hours there than any other place. But ensure that the sleeping quarters are clean, so the particles going through the humidifier are clean. Remember to run it on low, because germs, which are smaller than other particles, can then be eradicated by the filters. But switch to a high setting during allergy season, such as spring and fall. Fast speed maximizes the ability of the filters to capture large particles like pollen and dust. The Super Bowl, the Grammys, and the Academy Awards are coming up. Do you know the answers to these questions? First question, who won the first Super Bowl? Kansas City Chiefs, Washington Redskins, Green Bay Packers, or the Miami Dolphins? The answer, the Green Bay Packers. Question, who is the youngest person to win an Oscar? Was it Abigail Breslin, Tatum O'Neill, Anna Paquin, or Keisha Castle Hughes? The answer, Tatum O'Neill. What team has won the most Super Bowl championships? Pittsburgh Steelers, San Francisco 49ers, New England Patriots, or the Dallas Cowboys? The answer, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Which female has been awarded the most Grammys? Aretha Franklin, Alison Krauss, Beyonce, or Ella Fitzgerald? The answer, Alison Krauss. Which male solo artist has won most Grammys? Bruce Springsteen, Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, or Vince Gill? The answer, Stevie Wonder. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.